Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefry, and this is episode number 284. I want to thank you guys for listening each week. Truly appreciate those of you that like, share, comment. Just helps us continue to highlight the great people we have in our profession. Also want to thank our sponsors, and specifically Train Heroic, for bringing this episode to you for free. I only partner with companies that I believe in, both the people and the product, and Ben Crookston and his team at Train Heroic are not only great friends, but it's what I use on the daily in terms of programming. So if you're in the market, check them out. If not, just let them know how much you appreciate them being a part of the show. This week, joined by Taylor Johnson. We don't know each other well, but we have a mutual friend in Chris DeSanto who connected us, and just a really cool niche that he's in, and wanted to have him on the show to talk about a little bit. So Taylor, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day.
Hey, I appreciate you, man. Thanks for having me on.
Taylor, we'll get into esports, but I mean, you're an esports performance coach. You've worked for the 49ers. I'm sure you've had stops along the way. Which stop or which part of the journey has had the most impact on you as a coach?
That's a good question. I mean, you learn a little bit from every place you've been at. I've been fortunate to coach some great programs. I was at UCLA, USC, Auburn, Louisiana Lafayette, and San Jose State. And then 49ers the last 2 years of my career. And I would say at each one of those places, you figure out what to do, but more importantly, what not to do. And you never make those same mistakes. And you continue to build that, compound that information over time. But I would say one of the more profound experiences I have was coach for the 49ers under Mark Uyama. He's been a great mentor to me, and I've learned so much from him. And I really had a great opportunity to utilize a lot of tools in my toolbox while I was there. So I oversaw the sports science. I handled our nutrition. Of course, the bread and butter was the weight room and helped out with rehab. So I'd say that was probably the biggest, most impact on my career, of kind of the culmination on the traditional side, which then catapulted me into the transition into esports.
What do you feel like you learned or experienced there that was different than UCLA or USC or any of the others?
You know, I think the biggest difference is going from the collegiate world with this non-professional, I mean, there are professionals, but paid and unpaid, and just the conduct and how you approach the profession, and it is a business. And understanding the back end work, I think a lot of people think of the NFL as a lot of glitz and glamour, but there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes. So being able to navigate that space and build meaningful relationships and being able to work in that environment was a phenomenal experience.
Yeah, and Mark's a fantastic guy as well.
Yeah, he's awesome.
You know, you can't have those many stops without having some mistakes along the way. What's one of the biggest mistakes you've made and how you've learned from it?
Great question. I would say earlier in my career, I have a lot of confidence now, but I think I had a little bit of cockiness to me too. So you only know what you know. And we used to always tell him, he's like, you'll never know until you sit in this chair. And I think as you go to each place, it's always going in. So the mistake I think I made was, you know, like, oh, I got this, right? Having that confidence, but you also have to have an open mind and be humble. And I've always tried to be humble in those experiences. And that's where you really learn the most, right? You have 2 ears and one mouth, so you want to listen twice as much as you speak and soak up as much knowledge as you can. I think that was something I did well. And then learning from mistakes is, you know, never make the same mistake twice, right? If you do mess up once, you just never do it again. I think it's I've learned this now very early on in my career is the small details. So my first strength conditioning coach job was at UC Davis under Matt Brand. And I will never forget, like, this was a small mistake, but I never made the same mistake after, is I was hanging up the weights, the percentages for all the different racks. And for some reason, I didn't realize that I was hanging them up at different levels across the weight room. Yeah. So he walks in, you know, it's like 5 a.m. He walks in, he's like, what the hell is this? Right. And I didn't realize. I took a step back. I'm like, oh, shit. Like, all of them are different levels.
Right.
And it's So basically that, from that point on, I was always obsessed with the details, and how you do small things is how you do all things. And that's carried with me, and I've never made that mistake again. And I've always prided myself in paying attention to the details.
I agree. I think that's one of the biggest things that young coaches need to learn is excellence in everything that you do. You know, it doesn't matter what the job is, but, you know, finding excellence in everything. And when you do that, then that's when you're really, truly prepared for the bullets that fly at you when you're in that big seat, for sure.
Yep.
Well, I alluded to it at the beginning. I mean, esports, you know, it's funny because, you know, I wasn't really much of a video game guy growing up. You really kind of put that on the, put some pretty stiff limitations in terms of my kids even. But I was just on a college recruiting visit with my son, you know, and they're thinking about adding esports as a sport at the school, you know. And so what is esports, and why should a strength and conditioning coach take it seriously?
Yeah, so esports is the professional infrastructure for professional video gaming. And, you know, for context, I'm not a gamer myself, but I appreciate competition and the technical and tactical abilities to be able to perform at the highest level. And these kids, I mean, they're anywhere from 17 to 25 years old. They get paid great money. I mean, they're making six figure plus, and they compete at some of the highest level competition of a cognitive output that you can even imagine. You know, there's a lot more similarities and differences when you look at traditional sports and esports, although the differences are quite large. The biggest one being the physical output. For the most part, these gaming athletes are sitting for long periods of time, but there is an endurance factor. So you got to look at it from a bioenergetic standpoint of being able to sit for long periods of time and the fueling that comes in to able to feed into the cognitive performance. So, you know, being a performance coach in the traditional side and then kind of unpacking, you know, what's being done on the esports side, I saw a very smooth transition. Granted, the biggest hurdle obviously is that physical component.
Yeah, you talked a little bit about that transition. I mean, I would imagine, I mean, obviously there's some synergies there, and you know, I would say very, very similarly, the cognitive output in the NFL is much different than the cognitive output in college. But I mean, you've gone from environments where it's highly charged, type A personalities, people that are often bigger than us, you know, that you're motivating to somebody that maybe has never touched a weight in their life. You know, talk a little bit about the transition to that unique environment.
Yeah, you know, it's they only know what they know, right? And it's like that at any level for any athlete. And so it's starting the conversation and really asking the questions of what's kept them from getting into health and wellness. And it came down to three things. It was a lack of knowledge, a lack of resources, or a lack of confidence. And so what I did is I created the first two, and the third just followed. So I created a facility for them to train. You know, I'm a big fan of not doing too much too soon, too often. It's all about load management and being very strategic in how you dose the information over periods of time. We took 4 weeks teaching our guys how to foam roll and do mobility work to the point where they're like, all right, enough, I'm bored. I'm like, oh, perfect, let's progress. Right. So the concept and the idea were to build habits that then turned into lifestyle changes, very similar to how you would take the developmental process of the college world. You have like 4 years to do it, sometimes a little less, but being very strategic and intentional in how we introduced information. You know, and I would say at the very least, they're all curious. You know, the conversation, the first question I would ask is, you know, are you successful because of or in spite of everything you've done? And that is a very hard question to answer. And so what that did is it sparked the curiosity to then follow up with, would you be willing to try something different? And again, because the curiosity is there, more than likely they're going to say, sure, I'll give it a try. But it's all about the approach and how you kind of create that bridge between what their perception is of training and what the reality is, that it can be very, very broad in how you approach it.
Yeah, I love that question. If you're listening and you didn't pick up on that, I mean, the question of successful because of or in spite of, you want to create questions like that that you're typically answering or asking your athletes that there's no way to not answer that without dialogue, you know? Yeah. And I think that that's, yeah. You know, too many times we ask these yes, no questions to athletes and they're always going to look for the easy way out. But something like that, what a powerful question. I think that was fantastic. You know, most of these guys and gals, I would imagine, haven't done much training. You know, they probably haven't come to this environment. They are maybe a little bit inquisitive or you know, curious. But, you know, the first time you get under that, you know, in that workout, you're sore the next day, or the first time that you've, you know, you experience something that you fail at, especially these really high-performing individuals, I would imagine there was maybe some pushback and maybe some, you know, some bumps along the road there. What, you know, how did you continue to motivate them past their initial curiosity?
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, I very intentionally drew out the introduction period. So again, we took 4 weeks to teach them how to foam roll. And I prefaced all of that with, hey, look, give it 2 weeks. And after 2 weeks, you're going to start to feel some changes and you're going to feel a little bit better. Now, it may hurt at first, but hey, that's all part of it. Embrace the pain. It's all part of it. You know, this is just minor. So we took them through this process and the idea was not to make them incredibly sore and not to discourage them. And I learned this just doing rehab with various athletes. Success breeds success. So if you can let them leave the session feeling good and confident about what they accomplished and not fail, that's the likelihood of them coming back the next day and the day after that and building consistency is much higher. So the idea, again, knowing the population or demographic had not trained a lot before, I tried to seamlessly create a smooth transition into dosing everything accordingly. And it worked very well. I mean, the training sessions were never mandatory. They were voluntary, but we were also on them about getting them in. We'd see them. We had a training facility where they practiced on site and we had our facility built within that. So I'd go grab them in between games and whatnot. And they started out twice a week, moved to 3 days a week, and then asked me to train 4 days a week. So it just came with time. I mean, that happened over 11 months, but success breeds success. And it's all about building confidence and empowering them to make the decision to build that consistency.
You mentioned you have a facility where, you know, that you have them come to now. Is it set up like a traditional strength and conditioning facility, or is it, you know, is there, you know, are you enticing them with video screens and, you know, things that are typical to their environment, or?
Yeah, great question. You know, it's a traditional, pretty traditional setup. You know, it's got some racks, it's got some med balls, got some kettlebells, some bands. It's got everything you need. TRX. TRX is a huge part of what we do because it's easy for them to hook up a TRX strap at their house. You know, we try to teach them to do some stuff in between gaming sessions, pre-session, during, and then after games. But it's a pretty standard setup. You know, it wasn't anything too crazy. I didn't want to make anything too intimidating as well. Again, like knowing the population, majority of them have never been in a traditional weight room before. So what I didn't want to do was have some massive racks and crazy pulley systems and stuff like that. It was all geared towards this inoculation period of having them understand that there are useful tools and how those tools benefited them in the overall performance. Now there is a whole other side to that where we were doing some stuff with different technology, some pretty fascinating stuff in terms of the cognitive assessments and looking at cognitive load. We also did some research with some universities kind of unpacking that as well.
You know, when you're getting these athletes for the first time, I mean, what essentially is your pitch? What are you selling them on that you can really benefit them? Because a lot of them are successful not necessarily because of.
Yeah. Yeah. The conversation was always around their cognitive output is their moneymaker. Right, their ability to intake information, process, and react is really going to set them apart from everybody else. And we see this in traditional sports. I mean, it is marginal gains in terms of, you know, the person to the left and right of you when you're on that field or on that court. Same thing in gaming, where it is a split-second reaction that could literally be the win or loss of the game. And so everything we were teaching them about was to develop principles and habits around how to eat, move, and be healthy, all fueling cognitive performance. I mean, it always came back to, hey, your brain is your moneymaker. Let's get you to sleep better, because if you sleep better, your reaction time is going to be better. Your processing speed is going to be better. Let's get you to eat better, because if you can fuel your body right, you're going to have more fuel for performance. You know, let's get you to move better, because if your hips are tight and if your posture's off, your blood flow is going to be off or not be able to have better blood flow for cognitive performance. So it always came back to the cognitive piece. And they, I think they understood that, you know, on all the levels, they were like, okay, that makes sense.
You know, with strength and conditioning, there's obviously, you know, periodization of volume and intensity and duration for, you know, for performance variables. You know, with the work that, you know, Brett Bartholomew and some others have done with, you know, coaching the person and personality types and things along those lines, it's there. You're really looking at, you know, almost a periodization structure of cognitive load, you know, and how to manipulate those for those marginal gains, you know. Talk a little bit about your research that you've done that. And I'm curious as well about, you know, some of the assessments that you're doing that maybe are applicable to the sports world as well.
Sure. So when I first got into space, I mean, my background's in exercise biology, like neurophysiology and biology. So for me, I've always been fascinated with how the mind works and the neuroscience. And so in looking at the traditional side of what we've done of periodization models, looking at volume, density, frequency, intensity, I've always thought, like, okay, well, what does that look like on the cognitive side? And so it's just understanding that everything is stress. I mean, it's the classic Charlie Francis model, right? Everything is stress. You've got this glass, you're filling it up with water, right? And if it goes over, then, you know, that's essentially you're tapped out for the day. So being able to manage all these stressors and taking a step back and looking at the bigger picture and saying, look, when are you waking up? What happens between when you wake up and when you go practice? What happens after you practice? What happens when you go to sleep or before you go to sleep? So it's really just manipulating all these different variables and understanding that all plays a huge role in the performance come game day. And then can we work backwards, just like we do in traditional sports, of periodizing the training and load to get them to perform best when they need to. So in terms of the research, we did a study at the University of Montreal with Jocelyn Fabway and his research PhD students out there. Looking at cognitive profiling, trying to understand on a deeper level, you know, what's really happening inside the mind of a professional gamer, you know, and are there similarities and differences between looking at that unique population, cross-referencing that with 4,000 other elite level athletes. We're still waiting to get the research, the hard numbers back, but the preliminary results are that there are similarities and there are differences. And now we're going to start to dive into, well, what are those and can we start compartmentalizing those results with the type of game, the position within the game, and then cross-reference that against other gaming titles. Mm-hmm. In terms of the cognitive assessments, like Athlete IQ is a phenomenal assessment. Scott Goldman came up with that software and his team. They use that and for scouting for NBA and NFL. It's just looking at spatial awareness, processing, reaction time, and just really trying to dive deeper into understanding the different lenses that you can look at when you're just looking at the big picture and how the brain functions.
Yeah, I've always, I mean, they're doing more, obviously, with Athlete IQ and measuring some of those components. But, I mean, you know as well as I do, being in those environments, especially at the college level, such a missed opportunity when you're talking about personality types and cognitive IQ and spatial awareness and all those types of things. I mean, it's exciting to see that that's being done already, but I think it's an opportunity for us to look for inspiration from that environment that can be applicable across the board, you know?
I agree. Yeah. The thing for me is, you know, everything I'm doing right now on the esports and the cognitive side, I want to dovetail back into traditional sports. I mean, it's a seamless, at the end of the day, when you take a step back, everybody competes in some way, shape, or form in an arena, right? It doesn't matter if you're a professional athlete, an amateur athlete, a soccer mom, a stay-at-home dad, a CEO, doctor, lawyer. It is all about showing up and giving your best effort on that day. And training is training and preparation is preparation, and that will always remain the same. But how you go about that training and preparation will transcend all of those. Yeah. And so really, you know, it's all about taking a step back and seeing that everything's connected, you know, and that's the beautiful part about it.
Yeah, I agree 100%. You know, those, when you're talking, you know, with those high level athletes, obviously, you know, that they'll, when they're competing at the highest level, they'll understand the marginal difference and how everything makes a difference. But I imagine when you're getting that first 15, 16, 17 year old gamer that's used to eating Doritos and drinking Pepsi and staying up all night long playing games, you know, selling them on health and wellness and, you know, sleep and eating habits and all those types of things. I mean, they form some pretty strong habits at that point. When it's not about just the difference, the split difference of winning versus losing at the championship, what are some other ways that you've been able to tap into creating an environment in which they want to train?
Yeah, great question. You know, it starts with the pros. It's getting the pros to buy into the fact that they need to eat, move, and be healthy. And the way I've always approached it, it's twofold. You've got your enhancing performance, but then you have your longevity, right? So the reason why we do what we do in this space is to improve the performance and the longevity. And the goal in all of this, really, I mean, it's like, yes, I want to make very, very high-level gamers perform even better. But really what I want them to do is to learn tools and habits so they can be successful for life after gaming. Right. I mean, these are the life principles that you can take in your entire life, right? And hopefully teach them to somebody else. And what I found actually with even the younger gamers is they're already turned on to that. You know, a lot of the older gamers, these older gamers, like keep in mind, they're still fairly young. Right. That have been in it for 5, maybe 6, 7 years, you know, they are very ingrained in this is the way I do things. But this younger generation, this is what gets me so fired up, is they are seeing that other variables can factor into their success in game and out of game. I mean, that is the opportunity. For me, I want to promote health and wellness to millions of kids worldwide. Right. Why not do esports? So getting their attention and getting them to buy in is actually not as difficult as you would think, because you just say, look at some of these pro players that are now, I mean, there's some pro players that are pretty jacked. You know, actually, right. One of our guys on our COD team or Call of Duty team, Skump, he's jacked. You know, I haven't worked with him very extensively. I'll be honest about that. He's been remote, but I mean, these guys are starting to get tuned, because here's the deal. At the end of the day, they are just kids, you know, and they want to look good, feel good. They're making great money, you know, and that all factors into it as well.
Absolutely. Well, we end the show with some resources. Give us the best piece of coaching advice you ever received.
See what everybody else is doing and do the opposite.
So stay in a different lane. I like that. Yeah. What about?
Yeah, and that just goes to just being creative. You know, it's taking stock in what you've learned, and it's all about looking at it through a different lens.
I think that's something that is when you go back to being successful in this career, it's the ones that take risk are the ones that stand out from the pack, and they don't always work, but you know, most of the time, if you put a lot of effort into it, it's a calculated risk, you know, and I think it's great advice. What about a book, app, or website recommendation?
Yeah. One of my favorite books is called Mastery by Robert Greene. Yep. I read that about 3 years ago. Robert Greene's one of my favorite authors, but that really just drove home the concept of understanding the process. You know, it is a process to, you know, I don't believe you ever reach mastery, but the goal is to try to get as close as you can. I mean, that is the journey. The journey is more important than the destination. And actually going back to your first question about advice, it's develop relationships and always circle back. Like, I am so incredibly grateful for everybody in my network that I've met along the way that has been supportive. And that is incredibly helpful. To know that you have a team of people behind you, you know, and it's all about sharing knowledge.
Yeah, absolutely.
An app that I would recommend too is Oura Ring. So that's this sleep ring that I'm wearing. I love it. It's been great. It's always interesting to capture some information, some objective information to allow you to track your training performance over time. I find that to be very useful.
What, tell a little bit, I'm not as familiar with that. Explain, I'm assuming there's a cost associated with it. Is it an app that
you're able to- So the ring itself, I mean, it's a wearable piece of technology. So you buy the ring and you wear it throughout the day. You wear it when you sleep at night. So it's just a way to capture your sleep at night, but it also will measure your resting heart rate. And it factors that in over time. So when I was at the 49ers, we were doing heart rate variability. And so it's just another way to capture that information. Right. Side note, another interesting thing you could do without having to spend a lot of money is you can get like a $30 blood pressure machine, blood pressure cuff, and measure your blood pressure in the morning and at night. And you want to look at the difference. And if you're a dipper or a flipper, if your blood pressure drops at the end of the night, well, then you know you're in a more rested state. If your blood pressure spikes up, you know you're more sympathetic. Right. And so you can come up with interventions based upon that. And you want to look at that acute and chronic, so 7 and 21 day rolling average.
That's great stuff.
And then you had said even off camera that there's not too many websites that you go to, but you just kind of go where you know, friends recommend or you know, social media might recommend to something and you deep dive there, right?
Yeah. I love books, man. Like I love just tactile books. So, and I listen to a lot of podcasts, so that might be a better plug. Like Finding Mastery by Michael Gervais is one of my absolute favorite podcasts. Tim Ferriss is another phenomenal podcast. Aubrey Marcus is a great one. I love Joe Rogan too. Yeah. Love yours as well. You know, follow yours as well. You know, it's all about just, I like listening to the podcast because then I could find like knowledge drops. You know, I'll go chase that. I am always buying books on Amazon. Like one of my versions of success is to one day have a bookshelf like yours behind you. You know, just be blasted with books.
Yeah.
So that's
my wife hates it, but I'm
the same. Yeah, yeah. I dig it. You know,
look all over. I should flip the camera around. I've got books everywhere in here.
Yeah, I mean, Warren Buffett says he spends 6 hours of his day reading. You know, and he's incredibly successful. And the one thing I'll say, the caveat with books, or not the caveat, but just a side note, is, you know, the way I go about my books is I have three different categories. I have my classics, which is like economics, finance, business, sociology, psychology. I have my learning and leadership books or research articles that are pertaining to my profession. That's the second category. And the third is I always, always read books on successful people. So biographies and autobiographies. And I read those at night because that's when I get the inspiration. I go to bed, I wake up the next day ready to hit the ground running.
That's good. No, I've got three categories as well, but those are – I like those, how you've broken those down. I would add family in there once you – I don't know if you – do you have a family yet?
Not yet.
Yeah, that's a category to add in at some point as well.
Awesome.
Well, man, like I said earlier, I think, you know, taking risk and stepping outside and doing something that's different, is always rewarding, even if it's something that maybe doesn't fiscally reward, or maybe, you've invested some time, no matter what, and that in your career, you're going to come back to those experiences and know that you can handle anything that's thrown at you, or you can make a different way. And you've obviously done that. I'm very impressed by that. And it's really cool, a really cool environment. And not only that, but it sounds like it's very mentally challenging as well, where you're kind of, everything's new. And anytime you can constantly read something and it's always new, or you're constantly implementing something and it's always new, that's an exciting time as a coach and a pioneer, I think.
Yeah, I appreciate that. It's you know, if our lives are books, you know, I'm always thinking about what makes an interesting chapter, you know, what would be the most interesting thing next. And I always remain grounded in my values and my purpose as well. So my purpose is to create, lead, and serve. And so for me right now, what I'm doing is just trying to promote the message of health and wellness to millions of kids. I'm doing it through esports, and whatever that may be 10, 15 years from now, it'll still fall back in that. It could be a different industry or a different pivot, but I'm loving it right now.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game. Chalk Talk.